AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. The last bookseller, A Life in the Rare Book Trade, is the latest book from Gary Goodman, of course, from University of Minnesota Press. And it talks about a segment of our consumerism and our society, which is disappearing, which is the used bookstore and in all of its grandeur, which I just loved when I was growing up as a kid. Gary's kind enough to join us to talk about the book. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hi, Matt. How are you? I'm really glad to be on, and thank you for having me.
I love your bio, by the way. A semi-retired book, rare book dealer in Stillwater, put six kids through college selling secondhand books, a feat that makes him a genuine American hero. I'm not going to discount that. Well done, sir.
Yeah.
Your story sounds, it starts off kind of interesting here. You just back in 1982, you walked into a used bookstore and your life changed.
Yeah, I had never been in a used bookstore before in my life. I was working on a psychiatric unit that treated violent and mentally ill adolescents, and I talk about a particularly scary incident in the book, but let's just say that I came to the realization that working with people that want to kill you is not a viable long-term profession. And so I was definitely looking for something else to do. And one day my wife came home and told me that this small used bookstore a few blocks away from us in East St. Paul was going out of business, and I should go check it out. As I say, I had never been in a used bookstore before, so I went down there, and the place, as I say in the book, was not much bigger than a rich person's walk-in closet, and there were books everywhere, Reader's Digest, condensed books, and paperbacks, and it was very intriguing to me because there were a lot of older books, books published in the later 1900s and early 20th century. And so I struck up a conversation with the owner, whose name was Frank, and he said that he had to close the store because he had a heart condition. Mm. You know, it wasn't because business was bad or because no one was coming into the store. And so I said to him, well, what if you sold the business instead of closing it, how much would it be? And he started out at $25,000. And at the time, I barely had two nickels to rub together. And then he went down to $10,000, and finally he went, and I didn't say a word during this whole transaction. And then he got down to $2,000, and this was for 4,000 books that he had collected. So he definitely saw me coming and wanted to get rid of the bookstore.
And that original books that you bought, was there some real gems that were in there?
No.
Frank
would do is that after estate sales and library sales and book sales, he would go and collect the leftovers. Mm-hmm. So they were basically books he rescued on the way to a dumpster. And shortly after I bought the store, I asked a Minneapolis book dealer to come over and look at the books. And he looked around for about 10 minutes, and he turned to me and he said, "This is the worst, most picked over stock of books I've ever seen in my life." So it was a the books I bought from him were basically worthless. So even $2,000 was too much for the store. But I got fascinated by the book business, and I started going to estate sales and garage sales and that kind of thing. And as I say in the book, it was there I met the denizens of the book-buying underworld, which were there. You know, people think of people who buy books as sophisticated, but there are a lot of sort of loners and survivalists and people like that who are buying and selling books on the used books on the open market. And they, you know, and at that time, before the internet, they had to go out and do it. They couldn't. They couldn't sit at home and do it. So there was a definitely a seedier side to the seedier element to the book buying underworld.
You know, one of the things, okay, and this brings back a lot of memories because, as you just said, you couldn't buy these online. Online was in existence. The new bookstores didn't sell used books. And so the used bookstores had their place. I love the segment here where you go through and you describe where all the used booksellers used to be, like in Dinkytown and stuff. And I'm like, yep. Oh, that's right. I remember we used to have so many of them. It used to be such a business. And now it's something with the internet and the way we read books today, it's dwindled away and disappeared.
It's really, if you go back through history, the used book business has been around since ancient times. There are reports of people buying and selling handwritten manuscripts outside the gates of Rome 2,000 years ago. In the United States, used booksellers have been part of the American fabric since the country's founding. Benjamin Franklin sold used books, as did Henry Knox, his Secretary of War. So what happened to the secondhand book business because of the internet is not on the same level as, say, what happened to Blockbuster Video or travel agencies or phone books. It's the secondhand book business has been around for thousands of years. But if you look at what happened to, for instance, in New York City before 2000, there were 400. Before the year 2000, there were 400 used and rare bookshops in New York City, and now there are fewer than 70. And in the Twin Cities, there were over 50, and now there are fewer than 10. And so many of the stores in existence have either gone online or have gone out of business.
Hmm. The industry itself, and you, I want to be careful. I don't want to share too many stories from your book because I want people to go get this book. But the stories that you share about your journey through the rare book trade is amazing. And one of them is about forgers. And you talk a little bit about that.
Yep.
The one of the things that surprises me is that I love old books, and I'll stop by antique stores, and when I'm on the road in small towns, and you find great books. You know, sometimes I can understand a forger if you're looking at something that's on Antiques Roadshow. You know, one of those ancient old manuscripts that there's hardly any of them in existence. But I mean, it seems like there are a lot of people that will look at kind of these mid-level books, which might not be the most expensive, but they can make a profit off of them if they go down there and they forge those books. I mean, it really is an interesting business that these people, as you talk about, the seedier side of this.
Yes, yes, there. In the book, I talk about this guy named Eugene Field's son, Pinny Field, who had a whole operation of forging signatures on what he would do. He and his partner, they would take books from, like, say they would take a pamphlet from 1865, and then they would forge Abraham Lincoln's signature onto the pamphlet, and then they had guy that was the coachman for Mary Todd Lincoln, and they would have him attest that this signature was genuine, meaning, and he thought they meant his signature, But it really, what they were really after was him attesting to Abraham Lincoln's signature. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a, and that's certainly something that that goes on even today. There was a movie with who was Melissa McCarthy about a playwright who Lee Raswell. I can't remember her name. But she forged letters and that kind of thing from people and sold them to rare book dealers in New York City. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's and then if you want a real story, the story of Steven Bloomberg, who was from St. Paul, and he was probably the most prolific book thief in history.
Wow.
He stole 23,000, I have the figures here, 23,600 books worth an estimated $20 million. He was arrested in 1990. And he would come into my store on Arcade Street, and so apparently no store was too small for him to case out. And he would stand in the front doorway and look around. He had these big googly eyes, and he'd look around. And he wouldn't say anything because he was a very odd guy. I'm sure he had mental health problems. But he would look around and wouldn't say anything, and then he would leave. And one day I asked him if I could help him. And he asked me if I had a rare book room. And I said, and at the time I not only didn't have a rare book room, I didn't have any rare books. And so after that he left and never came back. And I was kind of mildly insulted that he didn't bother looking around to see if I had anything worth stealing. But
you talk about it, you eventually do get to talk, you know, you get to some books here. I love the story in your book here about the book that was so old you didn't realize. Where's the title page? It's from the 1500s.
Yeah, that was a very, you know, I'd been dealing in books for 20 or 30 years at that time, and I'd never seen a book that old. It was actually printed in 1501.
Wow.
And that was before they actually started using title pages. You know, the first title pages were maybe in 1500, but the idea hadn't caught on, you know, with everybody. And so I looked at the book, and I told the lady that I was buying it from that, you know, without a title page, it's really hard to sell a book. You know, although the book was old and beautifully printed, and I certainly could do something with it, I didn't think I could find out what the date was and where it was published. Well, here it turns out that information was in the back of the book and in very hard to read Latin, by the way. But that was quite an interesting story.
This is on this book specifically, but I mean, it's how much would a book from the 1500s, from early 1500s, how much does a book like that go for?
Well, it's all, you know, Matt, it's all depends on the demand.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a book from the 1500s that if nobody wants it, it's not going to sell for much at all. It might sell as a curiosity and for being so old and things like that. But if the book doesn't have a certain intrinsic value or interest, it all depends on that. Well, this particular book was quite unusual in that it was an early Catholic missal that was eventually banned and burned. So there were actually only four known copies of this book in existence when I. And as far as what it would sell for, it would probably sell for a lot more now than what I sold it for, because that was, it was many years ago. But it was, you know, it's in the many thousands of dollars mm-hmm. that a book like that would sell for.
You, as you build up your collection here, and you start getting more books. One of the things that's interesting, you talk as well about what I've heard from other used book dealers is kind of, you know, a holy ground. You go into someone's house that has a ton of books,
yep.
and you're like, wow, there's some value here. And you talk a little bit about is it Melvin McCosh?
Yep.
Yeah. In his house,
he's kind of the dean of Minnesota booksellers. He's legendary in the business, in the book business.
So, and you'd walk into his house, and his house was just full of books.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he had 500,000 books in his. He had a really ramshackle mansion on Lake Minnetonka that he bought after he moved from the West Bank in Minneapolis, and it's 500,000 books is the way I describe it. You could fill about 10 railroad boxcars.
Wow.
That would be about 500,000 books. And he had that many in his house. And they were a mixed bag. You know, you could find some good ones, and there was a lot of stuff that wasn't that good, but he was quite a character.
You yourself are now out of the business, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I had a store in Stillwater, and of course at one point Stillwater was known as the first book town in North America because I started as St. Croix Antiquarian, and then we started the Stillwater Book Center, and at one point we had 500,000 books within a 4-block radius of the downtown. And so the founder, Richard Booth, the founder of the first book town in Wales in Hay-on-Wye, came over and declared Stillwater the first book town in North America. It's all quite hilarious, mm-hmm. you know. But I think the book town idea. You know, Larry McMurtry started a book town in his hometown of Archer City.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what the book towns show is how popular used and rare books were. You know, kind of in the mid to later 1990s. And right as the Internet came, it really impacted that sense.
I kind of get the impression, though, that if used and rare booksellers are going to survive, it's going to be in that kind of vein, a town where there's 4 or 5 of them, and it becomes a tourist destination for people that, you know, can go easily spend a day, maybe even a weekend, just going through bookstores, I can see that.
I can see that too. And actually, Hay-on-Wye in Wales is still quite popular, and they have a book festival every year that draws, you know, tons of people. But the problem with the idea is that the Internet really, sort of standardizes everything so that a book in Wales is kind of priced the same as a book in Stillwater. So a lot of people who are into secondhand and used and rare books are collectors who used to go out and look for books that they could for their collections that were maybe underpriced or unusual or that kind of thing. And now they can go online and do that in 30 seconds. So the traveling and going to different places has become a lot less likely, I think.
Well, and it's a shame because it truly is, as like I said, I grew up with them. And, you know, there's a joy in going into a bookstore and spending an hour going and seeing what they have, finding, you find that book that I always meant to read that and read that, and you grab that book and you get to go. You know, it's to a point. I mean, on one side, you're right. The internet's great. It allows you to kind of sell worldwide. It allows books to be presented to people on their Kindles and all these things. But the reality is it's we've lost something when we lose the bookstores.
I think that's true. You lose a certain sense of adventure, for one thing, finding things that you weren't aware of to begin with, and the excitement of the hunt for collectors, and the even the sense of community in a lot of these stores. A lot of people would, you know, use them as gathering places and that kind of thing. But there's sort of a relentlessness about the internet, and that is, it's so convenient, and the prices are usually significantly lower than if you went into a bookstore, because of course there's no overhead or anything like that. So yeah, it's a tough problem to overcome, I think, for secondhand bookstores.
The last bookseller, A Life in the Rare Book Trade, Gary Goodman. This was one of the easiest interviews I've ever done. Holy cow. This book, get this book. It's a great read, and especially if you're, you know, like myself, you remember the used bookstores, you'll appreciate this book greatly. Gary, congratulations on the book. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Matt.
We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.